At first glance, one of the voting bills introduced by Representative David Bates this week would seem to be just a minor change, removing just four words from an existing statute. The Windham Republican wants to change the definition of what it means to be a state resident.
It merely strikes the words, four words, the phrase "for the indefinite future."
But that definition determines who's eligible to vote in New Hampshire.
I want to be perfectly clear, and it's been abundantly obvious to anybody who's looked at the bills that I have filed this session and in previous years, that the objective of a lot of what I've been doing is to ensure that only residents of our state are able to vote here.
This bill is part of a package of nearly a dozen election bills from Bates this year, many of which propose language changes aimed at narrowing the definition of who can claim residency for voting purposes. About 40 election-related bills are on deck this year in total. Many of those reflect long-running anxieties from those who believe New Hampshire's existing voter laws leave too much room for abuse. That's despite assurances from state officials that there's no evidence of widespread voter fraud in the state. Other proposals introduced this week would scrap same-day voter registration or add a requirement that someone has to be a resident of New Hampshire for at least 13 days before voting. The Secretary of State's office, while maintaining that the state's election systems are already solid, has expressed support for many of these proposals. But officials with the Department of Justice urged caution in changing these laws, particularly
in the debate over whether to tighten New Hampshire's voting laws, one group has been singled out more than any other: college students. Critics have denounced a Republican-backed voter registration bill as an effort to discourage students from voting. Some supporters of the bill have said college students have not earned the right to vote where they attend school. And HBR's Casey McDermott paid a visit to UNH in Durham to hear from some of the students who would be affected.
Last fall, Rachel Berg was one of the more than 3,000 people in Durham who registered to vote on Election Day. And she came prepared.
I had to bring a few forms of ID. I don't remember exactly what. License, I think school ID, and maybe my passport just to be safe. And then I also needed proof of residency.
Election officials in Durham have gotten used to seeing students arrive with a hodgepodge of items to prove residency: a letter from their dorm supervisor, a package mailed from mom and dad. In a pinch, students can even hold up a cell phone to show their dorm address listed on a university website.
I had never heard of that, but that's actually not a bad idea, frankly.
State Senator Regina Birdsell is sponsoring a controversial voter registration bill, which toughens enforcement when people show up to vote without the right kind of documentation. The bill doesn't say college students can't vote, and even says people can register by proving residency at a university. But it doesn't go further than that. Birdsell says the kind of documents students are already showing at UNH, even the website, sound like they'd be A-OK under her bill. But UNH student Elias Terrell Walker says even now, getting the right kind of documentation is easier said than done. His mail doesn't always list his dorm address, only the central mail room on campus.
You know, when I get mail sent to me at the university, I go up to the mail room upstairs and I pick it up, and it says my box number on it, and 83 Main Street, which is this building, the Memorial Union building. It's not Jesse Doe Hall, you know, in my room.
If someone doesn't have the proof they need on Election Day, they can still vote. New Hampshire's seen plenty of debates over voting laws in recent years. College student eligibility, photo ID, residency requirements, the list goes on. But something's different lately. Just ask the guy in the middle of those debates for the last 40 years, New Hampshire Secretary of State Bill Gardner.
I mean, you didn't get the level of anxiety that's created in the groups, people being paid to come here, you know, to take a certain position.
What Gardner's talking about is the way that election law is becoming just another partisan political issue, and one that comes with its own competing special interest groups looking to sway public opinion. Think of the door-knocking, phone calls, and political mail you're used to seeing from outside groups pushing issues like tax reform or clean energy. Expect to see more of that in the next year, including from Let America Vote, a progressive campaign to expand voting rights, led by former Missouri Secretary of State Jason Kander. The group recently announced plans to expand to 5 new states next year, including New Hampshire.
In all 5, we're setting up field offices. In all 5, there are politicians who are making it harder to vote. So in 2018, let's make sure those folks don't get reelected.
They already waded into some legislative special elections earlier this year. In 2018, they plan to knock on doors and run ads in lots more state races and have their eye on defeating Governor Chris Sununu, who supports tighter voting rules. Meanwhile, another group led by a former Trump campaign staffer also plans to set up shop here. Matt Brainard says his organization, Look Ahead America, plans to make poll monitoring and independent voter fraud investigations part of its agenda in New Hampshire.
This is All Things Considered on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. There's been plenty of talk lately about New Hampshire's elections and same-day voter registration, and that got NHPR reporter Casey McDermott wondering, what can we know about the people who are registering for the first time on Election Day? She just got some records back from the Secretary of State's office that help answer that question, and she's here to share what she's learned. Hi, Casey.
Hi, Peter.
So tell us, why did you look at these numbers in the first place?
So a few reasons. Most obviously, there are these unfounded claims that are being thrown around by President Trump and some of his supporters, alleging that out-of-state voters were being bused into New Hampshire in large numbers to throw the elections. We have no evidence to show that that's the case. There's also this ongoing debate in the New Hampshire legislature around voting rules, you know, same-day registration, how long someone has to be here to prove they're a resident, what kind of things they have to do to prove they're a resident, but also just thought it would be helpful to understand better kind of what the electorate looks like. So we know that the state keeps track of any time someone uses an out-of-state ID to register to vote, and I asked the Secretary of State's office for that data. They gave me some back this week with a town-by-town breakdown of the out-of-state IDs that were used to register in November.
And does that data tell you anything about the supposed motor voter, right? The Massachusetts voters coming by the busload to New Hampshire? Does it show anything like that?
It doesn't. And if it did, it would just show that those buses of Massachusetts were pouring into New Hampshire and taking a pretty meandering route all across the state. Massachusetts IDs were most definitely the most widely used among first-time voters in November. Of the 6,000 or so who registered with an out-of-state ID on Election Day, about 38% of those came from Massachusetts. But if you look at where those people are actually voting, the bulk of them were in Durham, Hanover, Keene, Plymouth, Manchester, and other towns that are home to college campuses, where you would expect large numbers of same-day registrants potentially with out-of-state IDs.
Right, and we should be clear that it is legal under certain circumstances for college students to vote in New Hampshire, even if they're from out of state.
Right. New Hampshire Secretary of State's office and New Hampshire law makes it clear that out-of-state college students are allowed to vote here as long as they're not voting anywhere else. And to vote here, in any case, you not only have to show an ID, and that could be an out-of-state ID or a New Hampshire ID, but you also have to show some kind of proof that you're domiciled here or that you live where you're trying to vote on Election Day.
And how is the state of New Hampshire making sure that those who vote here with an out-of-state ID are not also voting in another state?
So right now, they send letters to anyone who signed an affidavit saying that, you know, I'm saying that I live here, but maybe I don't have the kind of documents that you're asking me to have at this time. The state sends out letters after the election to all of those people.
In their New Hampshire homes.
In their New Hampshire homes, in the addresses that they provide on those affidavits. If those letters get returned as undeliverable or if the state doesn't get a response, then the Secretary of State's office forwards those cases to the Attorney General's office for review. The Attorney General's office can then choose to follow up on potential voter fraud investigations. Right now, they are pretty open about the fact that they don't have enough people to do that and have not been able to keep up with the flood of undeliverable letters that the Secretary of State's office has sent them, but there is at least a process in place to try to do that.
Mm-hmm. And we focused on college students briefly in these past few minutes, but it's not just college towns. It's happening elsewhere.
Right. Outside of college towns, out-of-state IDs are used all across the state, but really only in double or single-digit numbers at a time. There were about 24 people who used out-of-state IDs in Laconia, which has a fair number of seasonal homes or people who might live there only part of the year. One person used a Florida ID to vote in Pittsburgh, someone else presented a Maine ID in Waterville Valley, and someone else used a South Dakota ID in Barrington, just to name a few.
Okay, people coming from all over. But do these numbers actually tell us anything about the state of voter fraud in New Hampshire?
Not on their own, no. We also don't know the party makeup of how each of these individual first-time voters chose to, you know, align themselves with a political party. We don't know how these people voted. We can't draw a definitive line between these registrations and the outcome of the election. And there also are reasons why someone might legitimately register to vote with an out-of-state license on Election Day. Maybe they could have moved to the state recently, or like we said, they could be attending college here, both of which are completely legal under the existing New Hampshire law. We also know that college towns have consistently given Democrats a boost in close elections, but we can't say that it's definitely because of the people who register using out-of-state IDs. And again, if that were the case, it's still legal as long as those people are living in New Hampshire on Election Day. If anything, I'm hoping that these records can provide a little bit more clarity in this conversation about voting, which can often get bogged down in kind of anecdotes and speculation as opposed to the actual data.
Well, Casey, thank you very much for looking so closely at this data.
Thanks, Peter.
That's Casey McDermott, an NHPR reporter, and you can dig into town-by-town numbers and explore a map showing where first-time voters registered with out-of-state IDs in November at nhpr.org.
There's a debate in the State House right now over the question of who should be allowed to vote in New Hampshire. A big part of that lies in figuring out when and why a person calls New Hampshire home. As NHPR's Casey McDermott reports, answering that question isn't always straightforward.
Curtis Moore has been a New Hampshire voter since 2008. He's got a New Hampshire driver's license and has a mailing address in the town of Randolph, where he's worked off and on as a trail worker for almost two decades. When he first registered to vote, he remembers it being pretty simple.
I just went to the town clerk and gave her an address. I think I did have a New Hampshire license at the time that maybe she looked at, but maybe not. I'm not completely sure.
I caught up with Moore on the phone because right now, he's not in New Hampshire. He's in New Zealand. In fact, he spends very little time in the state these days.
When I initially became a New Hampshire resident, it was probably close to 50% of the year. Now it's probably more like 10% or maybe even less.
See, Moore's line of work takes him all over the place. So last November, he cast an absentee ballot from Arizona, where he was living in an unheated yurt while working for the National Park Service. In last year's presidential primary, Moore voted absentee from the South Pole, where he was doing facilities maintenance. His story might sound exotic, but it highlights a question at the heart of the debate over New Hampshire's voting laws. What exactly does it take to have a stake in the state's elections?
So just to set the table here, remind us of what this commission is doing.
Sure. So the commission launched in May by the Trump administration, and its stated goal is to study election processes and laws. But given the conspiracy theories that have been proffered by President Trump and his allies, including the commission's co-chairman, Secretary of State Kris Kobach, a lot of people have been worried that it will be used to advance more restrictive voting laws and to lend credence to unfounded claims about voter fraud. Now, Gardner, for his part, has said that he's going in with an open mind, and he's pushed back on some of the claims that Kobach has made specifically. But Gardner says he does hope that in the end, this panel helps to kind of improve public confidence in elections.
And so you wanted to know more about Bill Gardner's role.
Right. So I filed a records request recently. I asked the Secretary of State's office for documents, emails, and other records related to Gardner's work on the commission. And on Friday night, I got an email from Gardner's personal AOL account, which included a link to hundreds of pages of those files that fall under that category. And in the email, the secretary wrote, quote, "Although I view my role on the commission as being in my personal capacity, I nonetheless wanted to provide you whatever documents I have related to my work on the commission."
And you also received another batch of records from the Secretary of State's office, right?
Right. So then on Monday, the Secretary of State's office turned over hundreds more pages of emails and other documents. And what's interesting is that in those emails, it looks like the office tried to deny earlier requests from reporters and other groups who also sought records related to Gardner's work on the commission. And the office claimed that they weren't related to Gardner's official function as Secretary of State and therefore weren't government records under New Hampshire law. They since seem to have acquiesced, at least when it comes to providing those records to people.
So what Gardner and his office are saying is that he's doing this as Bill Gardner, not Bill Gardner, Secretary of State of New Hampshire.
Right. That's my understanding, which is interesting for a few reasons. First, it's a fine line to walk because Gardner is obviously chosen for the commission because of his expertise in elections, which, of course, comes directly from his role as Secretary of State. The second one is that at least one other commission member in a similar position, Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, has taken the opposite approach. So the news outlet ProPublica talked to him a few weeks ago, and Dunlap said that he's been deliberately forwarding all emails about the commission to his government email, even if someone contacts his personal email, because he wants to make sure that they are available under his state's public records law. And third, some of the emails that Gardner and his office shared show state workers completing commission-related work, apparently on state time.
Maybe I can ask also, what kind of commission-related work are we talking about?
Sure. So it's kind of a mix. In a lot of cases, the emails show staff assistants in Gardner's office forwarding news articles, press releases, or other research to the White House official who's acting as the point person for the commission. And in those cases, the subject line or the first line of those emails read from Secretary Gardner. Mm-hmm. There are also emails that show Secretary Gardner sought security clearance for two staff attorneys to attend commission meetings with him, and that staff assistants were involved in completing paperwork related to that. And ahead of the commission's meeting in New Hampshire in September, a few emails show staffers passing along a PowerPoint presentation, agenda, and other documents to the White House on Gardner's behalf.
Okay, so the takeaway here, even though Gardner says he's only on this commission in a personal capacity, his office has been used, at least in some cases, to do work related to the commission.
Right.
Okay, and you said there were hundreds of documents.
When John King of Concord showed up to protest President Trump's election commission at St. Anselm College yesterday, his homemade sign didn't mention the president, who set up the commission after floating conspiracy theories about voter fraud in last year's elections. Instead, King called out New Hampshire's top election official by name.
Shame on you, Bill Gardner. He's our Secretary of State, at least that's what I'm led to believe, and he should not be involved in this charade to vote. To suppress voting.
King wasn't the only one weary of Gardner's role on the panel. Peter Burling, a former Democratic state senator, also showed up to protest Tuesday's meeting. He was scratching his head over Gardner's motives.
When it came to this commission, I think Bill, either through an excess of naivete or ambition, I don't know which it was, decided to sign up for something that is, frankly, an attack on New Hampshire's traditions of voting.
Such concerns weren't just coming from disgruntled party activists. Last week, all four members of the state's congressional delegation called for Gardner to resign from the Trump panel. The criticism has been especially jarring, given Gardner's reputation. He's the longest-serving Secretary of State in the nation and has never faced a serious challenge to his job. And until this year, he's earned bipartisan applause for his role overseeing state elections and preserving New Hampshire's first-in-the-nation presidential primary. But his decision to join Trump's voter fraud panel has overshadowed that. Tuesday's meeting was Gardner's chance to address these public critiques head-on, and he wasted no time doing so.
New Hampshire people aren't accustomed to walking away or stepping down from their civic duty. And I will not either.
But Gardner didn't just use this national platform to push back on those protesting outside the meeting room. At one point, he also turned to the man sitting next to him, the Voting Commission's co-chair and Kansas Secretary of State, Chris Kobach.
The problem that has occurred because of what you wrote is the question of whether our election, as we have recorded it, is real and valid. And it is real and valid.
What Gardner was referring to is a column Kobach wrote last week, alleging that voter fraud was so rampant in New Hampshire last year as to sway the outcome of the election. Gardner's typically not one to weigh in on partisan affairs, though he's been a Democrat his whole career. These days, though, his defenders are largely on the Republican side. That includes State Senator Regina Birdsell.
He's been in place for 40 years. He's protected our first in the nation. And all of a sudden, he's not looking out for us? That's ridiculous.
Democratic Senator Donna Susie says that defense misses the mark on why people are questioning Gardner's role.
Bill is a person of such integrity and has done such a good job in running our elections that he shouldn't be associating with people making baseless accusations and statements that aren't based on actual facts.
And what does Gardner make of being caught in the middle of these competing choruses? If nothing else, four decades of local battles over ballot law have prepared him for this moment.
The angels aren't all on one side or the other side. So, and I'm not saying I'm always on the angels' side, but you learn over time, and it's good and it's bad having longevity.
Whether working with this commission will prove to be a wise choice in the long run, the votes have yet to be tallied. For NHPR News, I'm Casey McDermott.